Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the show, we're breaking down the season 20 premiere of The Real Housewives of Orange County with Bryce Sander from Entertainment Tonight. Bryce is somebody that I've known and worked with for over a decade now, which is crazy to say, and he's one of the truly preeminent Housewives interviewers. He interviews most Bravo stars on most seasons of their shows. He's always covering the biggest events, and he's always getting massive scoops. And I particularly associate him with the OC franchise, where, you know, living in New York, I might have a little bit more proximity to Roni or New Jersey or Summer House. Bryce is always with the OC and Beverly Hills ladies doing something on the West Coast. And so he felt the right person to chat with about this very big deal premiere with. I mean, 20 seasons is a big deal. And he also had just interviewed all of the OC women on the red carpet at the premiere party. So he brought some fresh, informed insights to the conversation that I found to be a big treat. Before we get to that, honestly, Bravo had a lot to celebrate after the Emmy nominations, which were announced earlier this week. Top Chef, which usually gets nominated, Kristen Kish was nominated for hosting. The Traitors got a bunch of nominations, including for Alan as host. Ariana Maddox was nominated for her work on Love Island USA, which I think is so exciting and really kind of like signals truly where she's gotten to in her career since being on Vanderpump Rules for so long. And of course, the big news, the headline out of all of this was that Summer House got its first ever Emmy nomination for season 10. I feel like it was especially deserving. I mean, given the season they had, given the moment the show had, given how well I think the network and production handled such a crazy moment. I mean, there were so many logistics that they dealt with and they produced it well. They picked up cameras multiple times. The editing was incredible. They delivered in the first ever three-part reunion that could have been eight parts. I mean, it was just everything. The aftermath episode, they fired on all cylinders and they did it so well. And everybody from the cast to the crew to the network, I think all deserve that recognition. It was the moment in reality TV for this year. And so being recognized at the Emmys, it just further solidifies that Bravo is at the forefront of this genre. And, you know, Vanderpump Rules was nominated after their Scandoval season. So there's no reason why Summer House shouldn't have been nominated for this. And yeah, it just feels deserved. It just feels good as a longtime fan of the show. You know, like I always say, I don't believe these are guilty pleasures. I don't believe that they're frivolous. I believe that hating reality TV does not make you deep, as my merch says. And I really believe that with my whole heart. Like, I wouldn't be pursuing this professionally if I didn't. So really fun news earlier this week. And sort of to celebrate it, Lindsay, Kyle, and Carl, the three big OGs of Summer House, they did an interview with The Hollywood Reporter. And it was mostly just kind of a fluff piece, like talking about how excited they were about the news. But at the end, they did ask about season 11. Which starts filming this weekend. And Kyle said, there's still some unknowns with season 11. We haven't picked up cameras despite being in the Hamptons last weekend. I said it in a post and I kind of said it accidentally and I set it off and I set off a bit of an avalanche. I said it was the end of an era. I think for people to use that term, I think they probably would have preferred I say chapter. But to me, it feels like the end of 10 chapters. I call it an era, but I think what's exciting is that season 11 has the potential to have a completely different look and feel. I feel like a lot of shows that reach a pinnacle, sometimes it's a little bit unclear where they go from there. The beauty of Summer House is you can throw whatever cast is on season 11 into a house in the Hamptons, and you kind of just let it do its thing. I think Summer House is going to have, like I said, the potential for a whole new chapter and a whole new look and feel and can avoid getting stuck on certain storylines. So to me, that signals likely no Miha. We're not going to be talking that much about the West and Amanda of it all. I'm sure they'll be talking a little bit about that. It'd be impossible. But I hope it doesn't define it. I hope it's not a cloud over the show. And I think that's important. They're supposed to move forward. And yeah, I thought that was a really telling answer. And I think it signals that they know what they have to do for this show. And one of the execs also did an interview with Deadline to commemorate the Emmy news. And they confirmed that there are new people on the cast. And so when they all drive out tomorrow or today, when you're listening to this, Friday, filming starting. So I'm sure Dumois and other places are going to be blowing up with spottings. And I'm ready for it. The other news about Summer House is that it's getting another spinoff over at Hey You, which is the international streamer. As you all probably know, it's technically owned by NBC. I don't know if that means that it will eventually air on Peacock or Bravo. I mean, Real Housewives of London, as you all know, was a Hey You production. It was only on Hey You for almost a year. And then Bravo all of a sudden put it on Peacock and it's going to air it on Bravo later this month. Oh, I realize I haven't even said where the location is. The Summer House spinoff is Summer House Canada. So it's not the Ozark spinoff that had been long rumored and reported on. It is Summer House Canada. It is going to take place in the forested landscapes and lakeside cottages of Muskoka, Ontario, where wealthy Torontonians get away to escape the stress of the big city life. That's what a Hollywood Reporter said. And then Hayu announced that it already started production. So, and the caption was "See you at the cottage," which is obviously a heated rivalry reference. That's where Shane and Ilya go at the end of that first season of Heated Rivalry in his parents' nice cottage. It's cottage country, I guess. So, you know, and clearly there have been plans to franchise Summer House. There was a big article in The Wrap earlier this year about that. I think that was probably supposed to be a tease for the Ozarks spinoff, that West Wilson was supposed to be sort of like the conduit to. I kind of would still watch an Ozark spinoff without a West involvement. I think I'd be intrigued to see that culture. I think it's something that's not represented on Bravo, but I'm very excited for Canada. I'm excited to see a new Summer House spinoff. I think it's intriguing. I think it's different. You know, and I hope that it's also that same format that we know on the New York version of the show, which is like we'll see them driving out from Toronto every weekend. Because, you know, I think Martha's Vineyard, which is the first Summer House spinoff that gets brought up a lot, you know, Justice from Martha's Vineyard, and that cast was pretty solid, and all the things. Like I believe that Martha's Vineyard deserved more. But the issue with Martha's Vineyard is that it wasn't a place that people in that age commute to and from every single weekend. So the filming schedule for Martha's Vineyard was a 2-week period, and that was all condensed, and that was all the footage they had. Whereas on Summer House, the original, they film for 9 or 10 weeks, and they film every weekend, obviously, but then they also still get week, you know, during the week footage. So that gives them a lot more of a runway to get actually good drama and to not have it be so condensed and like high pressure. And that's what Winter House was too, that was also filmed like Martha's Vineyard. So, and I guess Winter House was the first spinoff. So I hope that Canada takes the New York approach versus the Martha's Vineyard approach, because that was a big reason why the show didn't fully work production-wise. That's what they all talk about. But yeah, I hope that it ends up on Bravo or Peacock. Again, like, I think that the Real Housewives of London situation, that bodes well for it. Yeah, I'm excited by this news. I mean, it's hard not to be excited by it. Like, it's Summer House fever in 2026. So bring it on. Anyway, that is the Summer House News Bulletin for you. Keep listening for my chat with Bryce Sander all about the Real Housewives of Orange County season 20 premiere. Check out all of his interviews on the Entertainment Tonight YouTube channel. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. I want to gab. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe that getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. One way to close that gap and fight the stigma around mental health support is to be open about your own positive experience in seeking help, to encourage your loved ones to do the same and experience those same benefits. Because really, the numbers do speak for themselves. BetterHelp has over 30,000 therapists, making it the world's largest online therapy platform. It has served over 6 million people globally and boasts an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, which is based on over 1.7 million client reviews. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. All right, today we're gabbing with Bryce Sander from Entertainment Tonight. Bryce is a longtime friend, and it's been a minute since he's been on the podcast, but he's a return guest, and he is here to help me break down the season 20 premiere of The Real Housewives of Orange County. Really crazy. I know it's been said a lot, but it's pretty crazy. Bryce, thanks for being here on such a momentous occasion.
Oh my God, I'm so happy to be here. And also, I feel so old because I watched OC live on television 20 years ago when it premiered.
I was about to ask you that. So you were watching season one live.
Yeah, I remember why, because that was, you know, Queer Eye time had kind of like put Bravo on the map in a new way. And then there was a Blowout, which was the hair salon show, and then
Project Runway,
and then Housewives started being, you know, promoted, and it's kind of like Desperate Housewives, but not. And I was like, I got to check this out, and here we are, 20 years later.
Here we are. Do you remember back then, like, who you gravitated towards in those first season or two?
I think Jo was my entry point because she was, like,
sure,
close-ish in age. I remember because she was, like, the fish out of water. Vicky was always so wild. Had you asked me season one, I don't think I could have predicted that Vicky would have been the person who would have stood the test of time on the show. I think
it's pretty crazy.
It's kind of similar to when you think of, like, early New Jersey. They kind of positioned, like, Caroline Manzo as the center of that show. And it really evolved into, no, Teresa's the center of this show. And OC was kind of like, Gina's the center of this world. And then over time, it was like, no, Vicky's the center of this world.
What do you think it is? Is it like a relatability? Is it just like a willingness to put a lot out there? Is it just sort of how the cookie crumbled?
I think with Vicky, she has like no filter and doesn't hide anything and doesn't want to like compartmentalize her life. Gina got into kind of troublesome territory when her divorce started percolating and like the husband was living in the house, but they didn't want to talk about it. And you just like kind of heard him screaming from another room. And so, I think Vicky just kind of proved her worth. Also, as the show was taking shape, those first two seasons of OC are a different television series.
Very much so. Yeah. It took Miss Judge to come on. And
yes, as I think I've said on this podcast and every podcast I've ever been invited on, Tamara Judge is the architect of Modern Housewives, and give that lady her flowers, whether you like her or not. She created the roadmap and the user guide of how to be a housewife.
Very much so. Very much so. For you, what sets OC apart from other franchises? Like, what's the DNA of OC that makes it the show?
I think you always go back to the original text, right? And I interviewed the ladies last week at their premiere party, and Emily put it this way. She was like, we're like the wife that's always there. You can go out, have your affair, fool around, but you're always going back home to your wife. I was like, that is kind of what OC is. She goes, it's also why we are the most like battered and beaten of the shows, like the harshest judged, because there's so much time to have had opinions on this cast versus something like, you know, Salt Lake City that's only been around 6 years, or Rhode Island that's been one. Those are still like fresh and new and vibey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels steady. And that's what made, like, I think season 19 not work as well, because I think they tried to do what other franchises do, and it tried to be something that it wasn't kind of last year in a way. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think there was this like, I don't know if it was an intentional or subconscious kind of experiment going on with Bravo shows of infusing more of the like audience commentary into the actual drama of the show, like with the whole Kiki Monique and all of that stuff, where I think we like a break of the fourth wall, but not tearing the whole house down kind of thing.
Yeah, and like OC, that's just like not... It shouldn't be the fourth wall breaky franchise. Like, it's like Salt Lake City does that, and maybe it's too much, but it does it better than anybody else does, because it's sort of like a postmodern Housewives, right? Like,
Salt Lake City also came in and had the earliest scandal in any Housewives franchise trajectory with season two, Jen Shah of it all, versus like, you know, OC was low stakes drama until the Brooks faked cancer thing, which was kind of the midpoint in the run of the show.
Right. That's why I feel like in the run-up to season 20, though, I have felt kind of really almost relieved, because it feels like the messaging and sort of all signs point to them sort of going back to basics, or at least pulling back from what they tried last season. Do you get that impression?
Yeah, it seems the kind of notion at that whole premiere party, like the messaging that came across through every interview. I also talked to Frances Berwick, who oversees Bravo and Peacock Unscripted. And then they did a whole panel where they discussed it, was like getting back to the core of the show, kind of lowering the stakes, having fun, digging into petty drama, not life-ruining drama. I think they did kind of, it's like you go back to the original recipe of like, hey, what worked for this? And can we kind of take some of those ingredients out that we've added in over time and get back to that? I do think we're going to get cameos from women from across OC's history popping in and out throughout the season, which a lot of the current cast viewed that as like a pat on the back, like, oh, we're doing a good job. Like, they're willing to come back and kind of like give us their support. And so I'm excited to see, you know, like old friends with new faces coming in and visiting us. And I thought the premiere episode was it was like, I thought they were going to lean more into the 20th anniversary of it all. And I was kind of pleasantly surprised to be like, oh no, this is just like a standard, we're starting a new season of Housewives.
Especially because it starts out with this package that's like 2006 versus 2026.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm glad they started with something like that. And I think that what I took away from that sort of back and forth was like, a lot has changed, but also nothing has really changed.
Yes. I do think, season 15 or 16, they had Gina Keo do that, like,
that's
from Desperate Housewives voiceover. It's like, they could have saved that for the 20th.
So true. Yeah, that would have been a nice touch. And I like, again, all this is hammering home, like, this is still Housewives. It was Housewives 20 years. Actually, as you said, the first season was different, but
yes.
Like, it's a reassuring reminder that like Bravo still like is conscious of like maybe what viewers want, and like they want it to be that comforting presence, especially with OC.
Totally. I think they have to play the game of listening to the fans, but also tuning out some of the louder noise online.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it felt watching OC feels like coming home. Like you're just like, oh,
good.
I'm comfy.
Yeah, it's like there's glam aspects. It's not too glam. It's funny and ridiculous, but also like there are heartwarming moments. It really feels like a lot of the updates that we got were like really family centric throughout this episode, which I thought was really interesting.
It was a lot of like solo or two housewives scenes instead of like big group stuff right away or big drama right away. They did have to like reintroduce Vicky, which felt strange because it's like, we know her. We know Victoria.
Well, she's living in Mexico with her boyfriend and her brother.
Because she can't leave.
Yeah. Well, I didn't really understand why she can't leave. It's something about...
So she is claiming like permanent residency in Mexico. And I guess she had whatever the immigration is going that way. She had run out her chance, like her times to leave and come back. So she had to stay until her permanent residency card was, I don't know if it was like granted or at least approved, but she made it.
She made it in time for the finale party, yes, but not before we had to have Shannon go down and visit her so that we could get some
like,
filming going.
Would they have planned to film with Vicky in Mexico had it not been? But that's so Vicky to be like, you got to bring cameras down here. I'm not leaving.
It's like there's such a like chaotic overtone. It's just like, you know, she has the knee injury and then she has like the cyst removed on her side. So she has to be like bandaged in the car and they're going into commercial breaks with like her like squawking in the back seat.
Yes. And she still has not fixed the knee. I think she said she at the premiere was going in for surgery soon. She was trying to do a bunch of non-surgical things, but she was hobbling up and down that carpet. I mean, working as Vicky always does. And I was like, take care of yourself.
No. Is she getting her knee replaced?
I don't know if it's a replacement or what. She also seemed to not know fully the details of what was happening.
Got it. Yeah, she's trying to avoid that reality for sure. The first sort of group moment is Gina, Tamara, and Heather meeting up to do some sort of painting class, which it made me laugh when Tamara told Vicky later in the episode about them going painting. She's like, you can't paint.
Yeah. Well, and also them being like, DeBro definitely saw this on TikTok and decided,
right,
oh, do this.
She does love a TikTok.
That's kind of where they dig into like the aftermath of the reunion.
Yeah. And like, you know, Tamara has the perspective that nobody was there for her last season.
Yes.
I think that's going to be a controversial thing about like how warranted is that for her to argue that?
Yeah. I mean, I do think objectively watching that finale, she was left on an island at the end.
For sure. Objective.
Whether you agree with she should have been or not, I think is the question.
Mm-hmm.
What's strange to me is there's no unpacking of all the accusations thrown at her at the end of that reunion.
Right.
Like, you set this all up. You went to take blah, 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 blah. It's just kind of like, Tamara's an asshole. And it's like, well, we should really dig more into why you think she's an asshole, which she's denied. And knowing Tamara as long as I have, I'm like, I don't really think she is somebody who does stuff behind the scenes in that way, like sets stuff up in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's very aware of how it all works. And she sees things five steps ahead sometimes, but also like, I get why they're not retreading that, you know, because it really does feel like they want to move on and that was not received well. But like, it is being also kind of sanded down.
Yes, it's being sanded down. And it's one of those things that was like, okay, fine, we're never going to get answers here. But it did, that all felt to me like something that was invented and manipulated to try and have a big bombshell moment that kind of goes back to the point at the beginning of, we got to strip it back to like the reality show at the end of the day. Let's live in reality as much as we can within the confines of what reality means these days.
Very much so. We also obviously find out that Gina is engaged, and we have a little, of course, they have to ask Heather if it's a natural or a lab-grown diamond.
Which I was wondering why, before I watched the screener, Heather was posting a lot, talking on our podcast a lot about like, do you care if something's lab-grown or if it's, and I was like, oh she
God, Bryce, I did not. Oh, wow. Good for her. Good for her.
She is a smart cookie.
Yeah, and she does love her TikToks. That's a great way to be planting those seeds. So, okay. This next part, I was like, this feels like a unique thing where we talk about drama between Shannon and Tamara that happened during Girls Trip filming. And Girls Trip doesn't come out until August. So they're kind of like, they're talking about the particulars of it, but also kind of talking around it. And we have like stock footage to tell this story from the Quiet Woman altercation.
The Quiet Woman B-roll flooding. But yeah, I was like, oh, they're breadcrumbing what happens.
They're breadcrumbing, but like, has it ever happened where like, because usually how this works is that like they're alluding to like, you know, on Summer House, they're alluding to what happened on Winter House the past season, or they're alluding on Southern Charm to what happened on Summer House last season. This, they're alluding to drama that hasn't been shown to audiences yet. And so they're describing it, but I can't remember the last time that a Bravo show has like talked about drama from a show that has not aired yet.
The only example I can think of is that one season of Jersey where they like filmed the reunion while they were filming the next season. And so Jacqueline didn't show up. So they kind of had to address that. But I think that's why Andy repeatedly says, like, we've learned our lesson not to like double film or film on top of each other. So I think this is just a unique situation where it's like there's not normally somebody crossing over or multiple people crossing over to another show that's been filmed but hasn't aired yet. But so interesting that Ultimate Girls Trip films before the season of OC, but we're getting this season of OC before that season of Girls Trip.
It's fascinating. It's honestly, when that was happening, I was like, this feels really unique. And like, I guess what happened is that Tamara called Shannon a mess who can't get a man and doesn't own a house. And Heather says this got a lot of the other housewives chatting from other franchises. They were all like really kind of scandalized by whatever argument they have at the Quiet Woman. It definitely made me intrigued for, I think this is the beginning of the Ultimate Girls Trip season. It really is for the purposes of OC. It's like, okay, Shannon and Tamara are still very, very much at odds. They're not even speaking.
Yes. And I spoke to Shannon about this at the premiere. And this was, it was interesting because they did the carpet, then they went in for a panel. On the carpet, she's like, we're in a place where you can be in the same room. That's all I want. At the panel, then they dropped this bomb. They spent 2 hours on the phone last night, like the night before with each other. So I do think there's forward movement happening there, and they don't know how to talk about it without spoiling where the season of OC goes. Gina did then cut Shannon and Tamara off as they were discussing the two-hour phone call at the panel and went, we spent a whole season trying to get the two of you back together, and we're learning this now? Mm-hmm. So maybe this season doesn't lead to the Trace and Amigas being...
And Shannon says at some point in this episode, like, she doesn't really want to be friends with Tamara. And yet again, she just wants to be at a place of like not arguing, I think is what she says. But as you said, like, it sounds like it's unclear whether that happens in the season or not. Do you get the impression that they are even going to like have arguments like that? Or are they like completely ignoring each other?
I do think there's definitely tension and things we'll see between Shannon and Tamara from what I know. I do think they filmed one-on-ones this season to try and like level set. But yeah, I think Tamara is way more willing to get back in the ring than Shannon.
Totally. So we have Emily and Jen dinner that we later learn Carmela came to.
Yes. Which is also interesting that it's like we watch this whole scene and then we get a flashback later in the episode. It's like oh, there's a whole cast over there.
Exactly. We find out that Jen's son was pulled over for going 105 miles an hour. This little tidbit I found to be kind of unexpected, I guess, which was like Emily says she has not spoken to Tamara since BravoCon, which I think is several months at this point in filming.
Yeah, I think they filmed in February or something. And they filmed in, February.
Yeah, so that's interesting. And on the reunion, I mean, she brought up how on the reunion, Tamara shaded Emily's podcast that was at one time on Tamara and Teddy's podcast network. I had not really remembered that comment. It didn't really stick out to me. But I think that, like, this kernel that we're following, it's kind of interesting. And I feel like it's reflective of Emily kind of increasingly feeling emboldened in sort of her status in this group.
Yeah, I think, you know, she and Gina are on their eighth season each, and they're behind, like, the core four of Vicky, Tamara, Shannon, and Heather. They're the longest serving OC housewives. So I do think they feel a certain place in the kind of, like, pantheon of pop culture they found themselves in. This season seems to be a lot about redemption for Tamara and Emily finding her voice. And whether that can work out or not. I asked Emily, because she said something about, I need Tamara to take accountability. And I asked her, what do you need her to take accountability for? And she couldn't answer it. So I thought that was interesting. Of, like, she threw this thing out there that when asked for, what do you need her to do? Like an action item, she didn't have it. She just talked about, there's just a lot of history in the podcast network and blah, 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 blah.
So maybe she's latching onto the podcast thing as, like, her only personal grievance with, because to me, Tamara is one of those people where if you're looking for somebody to go after or pick a fight with, she's the easiest person to do that with in terms of, like, she's going to give you the fight, but also, like, some of the audience and such will be behind you for doing so, because it's just like, she's an inevitably divisive person. So that is really interesting that she couldn't completely explain that away. This is also the scene where we get, a big hint about where Jen is going to go first, which is to really unpack Heather and Tamara's friendship. Because we learn, and I always love a post-reunion reveal, like when the cameras go down at a reunion, what happened? You know, Southern Hospitality this past season was all about that. Jen reveals that, you know, everyone went out to dinner except for Tamara. Heather apparently led the charge in anti-Tamara chat at this dinner, but then she also called Tamara the next day. Is your read on that Heather was trying to get ahead of that? Is that the implication? Playing both sides?
I think Heather's really good at the game, right?
Yes.
I think that's where she finds herself in trouble this season, is she's going to talk to you about the thing you want to talk about. But then that could get you in trouble, because it's like, well, were you talking behind my back when you had that conversation and I wasn't there? And I also think about going into that reunion, people were very disappointed in how Heather handled the Gretchen of it all. They wanted her to hold her feet to the fire more. Mm-hmm. And they all just kind of, like, the whole cast outside of Tamara kind of let Gretchen fill in the narrative and set up this whole thing that Tamara somehow spent the last decade building an entire internet
ridiculous
universe that was going, that was slowly scraping away at Gretchen so that when she came back on the show, she could take her down. I think Gina told me that, like, the scrappier, edgier, rougher around the edges DeBro showed up to film this year. Heather compared it to the last, or not compared it, but said she learned a lot of lessons season 17 when she got into, like, the IMDb fight with Taylor.
Sure.
Everyone was piling on and she was, like, crying on that cast trip. She's like, I show up in a very different way when I'm confronted with this stuff this season. I think she fights back, which is not
good.
Isn't that what we've seen since, you know, season 9 when she told Shannon to leave, or even when she joined the show with she ate the bow off my cake. I'm interested to see how Heather navigates this. We don't really get any major confrontation in that premiere about this. It's just kind of the foundation is set for this to be drama. Heather said that the historical friendship made it out alive. So wherever she and Tamara, whatever they get into, they're okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's the other thing that comes up here is that Jen tells Tamara that Heather said that she puts her friendship with Tamara in a box. And that's how she can kind of, like, not excuse the behavior, but that's how she can move forward with that friendship, that historical friendship. Historical friendship is going to be, like, a term of the season, clearly.
It's totally.
But I really love, even though this kind of has nothing to do with Jen, I do like her fearlessness with this. And I think that it shows good instincts as a housewife that I feel like she's always had.
Yeah, 4 years in, she's like, oh, I finally have the whole playbook. I know how to do this. And she said the overwhelming thing from everybody on the carpet was this group gels. Like, this cast works. Gina said for the first time in her 8 years doing the show, they are all on a group chat together and everybody participates.
Wow.
And she's like, that means a lot to me, knowing like where we've come from, where we've been. So I'm hopeful that that sisterhood thing kind of shines through.
Me too. But I also do think that the Heather and Tamara thing we talked a little bit about last season on this show. But Shannon and Jen's argument is like, we just want Heather to be honest about her feelings about Tamara. And I do think that, you know, Heather, as you said, knows how to play the game. I think Heather is incredibly well media trained. She's an actress. Like, I don't think she acts on this show, but I think that she has some of those instincts. And I think that, like, in the past, when she's asked about Tamara, she is really adept at giving an answer that's kind of a non-answer or sort of circumventing. Yeah. And it sounds like this season, she's going to be forced to handle that in a different way, which I'm excited to see, to be honest. It's an interesting tidbit. It's an interesting, compelling thing for me.
Yeah, I think it'll be like a through line thread of the season of this string being pulled. Heather always calls Tamara her housewife maker, like a vampire who bit her and turned her into a housewife. And so I think that's why she
like
puts her in that compartmentalized box of like, I'm always going to have this woman in my life because she is the person who, you know, Heather was obviously like cast and found and didn't really know anybody when she joined, but Tamara was who they decided to pair her up with and film that first scene looking at property. And then Tamara took her out to an off-camera lunch after. And that's kind of, I think, where Tamara explained how it all works to her.
And it's interesting because, like, there's kind of a parallel between how Heather talks about her friendship with Tamara being a historical friendship. And she kind of, she doesn't say that she gives her a pass, but she uses the terminology, puts her in a box, I guess. But Tamara says something similar about Vicky at some point during the party. She's like, because Heather brings stuff up about Vicky and what she said about Tamara in the past. And Tamara's kind of like, I've been around with Vicky for 20 years. She kind of gets a pass. You know, yeah. I think that's kind of it's kind of a parallel thing in how they view these longstanding friendships.
Totally. And it's a complicated world. Like,
it is.
These friends, but they're also your coworkers. So it's like, how do you navigate that dynamic?
And it's such a hallmark of Housewives for the newer people to like really not fully grasp that.
Yes. It's kind of like how we all blindly went in the early days. Like, oh, this is a real friend group. All people who know each other. And it's like, it was some more true then than it is now. But
right.
You do have to look through it through the lens.
What's your view on Vicky kind of accepting Tamara's olive branch in a way? Like, or I guess Vicky reached out to make a truce or Tamara, I forget exactly who reached out, but they have gone to a place where it's all water under the bridge, seemingly. What's your take on all that?
I think Vicky's the happiest when she's on Orange County Housewives. And I think she cares a lot about the show. And I think Vicky has a lot of feelings when she's not on Orange County Housewives.
Of course.
And so I think that is also at play here of Tamara having to be like contextualizing things Vicky says in the offseason. It was like, well, she's pissed because she's not on the show. She's annoyed that she's not a housewife. And now that she has her orange back, it's like, oh, it's the Victoria that we all love is here. And Vicky said she came into this season wanting to have fun, like not wanting to live in any of the past. The past comes up. I think there's going to be a confrontation about, you know, Vicky making that offhanded remark about Tamara choosing fame over motherhood, which Vicky then tried to explain to me is like, well, that came up because I was trying to talk about why, you know, Tamara's so mean to Shannon. And I was like, okay, this is complicated, at least in your head, it's gotten convoluted. So I think we'll dig into some of that. But I do think, you know, if Vicky's got an orange in hand, she's a better Vicky than without the orange.
Totally. That's a really good way of putting it. And do you get the impression that Vicky's going to be caught between Shannon and Tamara? Are they going to be fighting over Vicky? Is she going to be trying to bring them together?
I think she's going to try and be the peacemaker. Though I think Gina is a real like peacemaker of the group this season, the one who tried to get everybody, you know, if she like immediately apologized to Tamara when Tamara asked for the apology.
Right.
So I think that's kind of like, Gina's like, let's just have fun.
Wait, did you get this kind of Mad Libsy quote from Vicky when she was talking about the Tamara situation? She was like, you know, I had sepsis that went to my brain, and that made me think differently about my feud with Tamara because of the comments that I made about her daughter, which happened when she was getting her chemical peel. And we see the it's really just pick a fucking thing and put in the sentence.
Yes. I did say to Vicky, why do you always have to bring it back to death? And she went, I saw life insurance.
not no.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I also did love, again, there were a lot of these sort of passing moments where we check in on people's families and what's going on. I loved this. Shannon's walking Troy and Archie, and she's trying to get them to take a picture in front of a sign that says
outside the Oppenheim group.
Oh, that was outside the Oppenheim group.
That's the, yeah.
There was a sign that says Mahjong is my Valentine. I'm like, Why do we have to have the dogs in front of this sign? I just, it's unreal sometimes.
I was like, oh, because Archie's no longer with us.
I know. It's really bittersweet. And yeah, Gina and Travis, they're thriving at the gated group. And he's obviously wearing his gated group merch, which good for him. It reminded me of how Jo Ellen on Rhode Island, her husband was always wearing this like shirt they clearly made for the show.
The about Gary's his, like, Tiberi, whatever.
Mortgage lending or something like that.
You know what?
Listen.
Make yourself a billboard.
Exactly. I totally agree. And I guess one of her storylines this season will be, is she's going to change her name if she gets married, which is very Sutton Brown coded, sort of on the reverse.
Yes, very much so. I love when her mom was like, you could hyphenate. And she was like, Kirschenheit or Mullen? In what world am I going by that? Well, this was the like shock of the premiere carpet for me. I asked Vicky, who's the housewife that's come after her? Any city that makes her most proud? It's like, you're carrying on the legacy. And she said, Gina.
What was her reasoning?
Because Gina has lived through so much in her 8 years on this show. We watched her in a young marriage, the marriage fell apart, going through a divorce, you know, finding love again. And then, of course, the thing that made Vicky most excited is she found a career she's passionate about.
Which is something to be excited about. You know, so many of these women don't have other careers, not that they need them necessarily,
no, but
it's putting all your eggs in one basket. And
do you work for 20 years?
Yeah, totally. And as we know, like doing nothing else is a dangerous game as a reality star. And so I think it genuinely made me happy to see Gina and Travis talk about how well they're doing, and they live in a nice house. Like it's they should be proud of themselves, honestly.
100%. Yeah. I think I've said it on here before. If the show is your life, you don't have a life to show. So it's like, you got to have other things that kind of inform your world.
Yeah.
So when we do check in on you every year, there's more going on than just like, let's make a TV show.
100%. I also like, I really like Gina's mom. I wish we got to see more of her because she is like the, she has a New York energy, you know?
Well, there's another New York mom.
another New York mom. Heather's mom. She moved across the country, and we got to check in with Carol. And her quote was, I guess Heather asked, how are you liking LA? And she says, God created Los Angeles, but he lives in New York.
In New York.
It's a pretty good quote.
It's a pretty good quote. When I asked Heather, I was like, oh, does your mom, is she like close to you? Did you move her in the same building? She was like, no, she lives near my sister.
Close, but not too close.
Yes. It's like, I think they're all on the west side of LA, but it's like, the sister's closer in case of emergency.
Right. And we heard a lot about sort of Heather's perspective that Carol kind of continued to live her own life and wasn't really there in the way that Heather might have envisioned as she was raising her kids and Carol's grandkids, which I think is like, I don't know, I always find sort of the generational cross-generation discussions on Housewives to be really interesting. And it really tells you a lot about like how the Housewives themselves approach parenting or approach life. And I think that's kind of the case here.
Yes. And the kind of missing context for Heather when I spoke to her was her parents owned like four homes up and down the East Coast, or like had multiple places they could go on the East Coast. So it was like they had the resources to have something out West or come out West more. And that was kind of the underlying issue there, is it's like, well, you could have and you chose not to. It wasn't like it wasn't an option.
Which is, I mean, now that you frame it that way, it's valid, I think.
Yeah, because two people flying out to LA or OC is a lot easier than two parents and four children flying to the Hamptons as Carol wished every
Totally. Yeah. I'm expecting to unpack that more as the season goes on.
Yes, I do think we get a lot of Carol, and I guess Carol was constantly asking Heather if she could have Andy Cohen's number to talk to him.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And Heather did not give it to her.
Okay. I expect her in the Oprah chairs for Heather's first Walt Chappin's live appearance.
Yeah, because she'll take any chance to get back to New York.
There we go. Where God lives. And it's interesting because it sort of does tie up into this maybe mini beef that Heather has with Vicky, which is that like Vicky says that Heather and Terry inherited their money.
Yes.
And she's kind of like sticking to the story of like doctors don't live in $40 million houses. And Heather brings it up directly with Vicky at her Valentine's Day party. And she's like, how could we have inherited it? Both of our mothers are alive. We're self-made. If they seem to have smoothed it over pretty quickly, I don't expect this to continue.
Vicky just kind of let it roll. She was like, okay.
She wasn't in the mood to have conflict.
Yeah, because I'm so used to Vicky being so like strong in her convictions when confronted and like fighting back. So it was like, oh, it is a bit of a new Vicky. But I also thought like, Heather, who cares? You're rich.
I know. Yeah, like what's there to be defensive over? And I don't even think that Vicky was like necessarily minimizing like Terry's accomplishments or Heather
and
Terry's accomplishments.
I think she was just like they got a very lucky life. Like they got all this money, who knows where it came from. And like, yes, I think Terry's been very successful. I do think Heather's like acting career was more profitable, especially because she was working in the time where TV really paid a lot of money.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. And people maybe give it due. But I do think there's pieces of the puzzle there that are missing. There's this level of wealth didn't come just from that. Maybe they were smart investing along the way, you know, and Heather's not really filling in the blanks there.
But they could easily say that if that's the case too. And also like you say that, you know, your parents had four homes on the East Coast. Like it's hard to imagine they weren't giving you some sort of, you know, stipend. You know?
Yeah. Or did you, when you got married, did you get like a little nest egg or something? You know, was there help at some point that put you on this path?
And there's zero shame in that. You know, it's like as we all go through life, we find out that certain people's parents are paying for certain things and others not. And like you just have to kind of accept that. But it's sort of like it's the denial of it. I think that like is what other people have a problem with. That's actually a very relatable thing, even though, you know, they're 30 years older.
That whole thing of, we grew up comfortable. And it's like, well, what is that? Let's totally.
And I also thought it was interesting. You know, we have this talk about Heather's kids and her parents. And we have Nikki sort of as the master of ceremonies, so to speak, at her first party. And Heather's been dropping like not so subtle hints about Next Gen LA and how filming for that is going great. I don't really know exactly who's on that show, but Nikki is definitely one of the people on it. So it's very hard to like be planting the seeds and sort of tee him up.
Yes, I was like, oh, this is definitely, whether by design of Heather or the producers, like Nikki being here is not setting us up. Yeah, I don't know who's on that show. I think Alexia Umansky posted like a tearful video finding out she didn't get it.
Did she? Oh my God, I need to go look at that.
Like, she didn't say, I didn't get Next Gen, but she was like, I'm not getting this really big opportunity I thought I was going to have, and I'm really sad about it. And it was around the time all the
I really like Alexia. I would have loved to see her on that show.
Same. But I also wonder if she feels like a little older for that group now that she's married.
Yeah.
Or if they felt a certain way about the baggage of like buying Beverly Hills, you know, a lot of.
And Sophia didn't pop as much on camera, I will say, in season two of Beverly.
No, but her on TikTok does pop.
It's true. It's true. But I don't know. I'm kind of happy I don't know exactly who's on that show, to be honest.
Yeah. And it sounds like maybe they were just kind of like doing presentation filming or like testing filming, and it's not actually fully in motion yet.
Got it. So maybe also Heather's talking about it publicly to like drum up support for it.
Yes. That whole, like, what Miley Cyrus said about the, like, Hannah Montana anniversary. Like, I just started saying it was happening.
So 100%. Exactly. Who's getting married first? Jen or Gina?
I think Jen. because Travis, to my knowledge, is still legally married to his ex-wife because it's like a very
Gina did allude to still proceedings
legal
ongoing.
Legal situation. And when I asked them both about this at the premiere, and Gina said, I want to live in the engagement, like, happy place for as long as possible. I think it's a good stage to be in. I feel married already. I don't need it to be a legal thing. And Jen said she's finally given up, like, her dream of all her kids being there, that Ryan keeps booking vacations to Mexico. And it's like, is this the one? Is this the one? Is this the one? So I think Jen and Ryan will marry before Gina and Travis, even if just because of, like, legalities involved.
Sure, sure. But I believe that about Gina, too, because I feel like they haven't been in a rush. Like, they've had to have a lot of patience over the years with a lot of different things. And so I do think it's curious why Ryan and Jen are waiting. So, like, they're having a long engagement.
Yeah, I think it's fully on Jen. She wanted, like, her dream was the kids need to be there. The kids need to be there. And now with her one son who's in the Marines, I believe, her other son who just graduated USC took some job. She said that he's traveling, like, every other week. So I do think it was she just needed to know where it will land. But it will be, she said, it will still be a beach wedding. I said, will it be a bikini wedding? She goes,
I hope
maybe.
So.
I was like, will it be a white bikini? And she was like, just make it as trashy as possible, I guess.
I love it. And when they went bikini shopping for her wedding at the beginning of last season, I was like, I fucking loved it. And I hope that that's on camera. I hope that whatever she decides to do is on the show. I think the last thing to really mention is that we get introduced to the new housewife, Carmela. She is Jen's friend. They shared a hairdresser, so it seems like a loose friend.
It feels like the early days of Jersey where they, like, all went to that, whatever that salon was called.
Yes. She's a former playmate. She lived in the house across the street from the mansion, never in the actual mansion. We don't really get that much more about her, but we do get the hint that she's not going to bow down to Vicky or sort of respect any of the sort of seniority that I think sometimes this group wants to be upheld.
Yes. Yeah, she's not bowing to Queen Victoria, as she's been come to be called. Vicky aside, everybody gave Carmela rave reviews at that premiere of, like, she came in, she's like, who she is today is exactly who we met. There have been no surprises. She's been open, honest, and, like, 10 toes down in the experience. So I think that's good, because that hasn't been the case of a lot of OC additions over the years. And Carmela said she's found friendship with everybody. I asked her, because, you know, they filmed in Tokyo and all those Tokyo pictures came out and she's not in them. And I was like, were you in Tokyo? And she was like, I don't know if I can answer this. So I'm interested to see what that leads us, like where that leads
us. I had not clocked that she was not in those photos.
Yeah.
And then them going on that trip is
it feels like a choice after.
Definitely.
Last year.
It's sending a message and I'm not sure that's going to land well with a lot of people. It already hasn't. Yeah. But the Carmela piece, I did not clock, and that's, we'll be watching this space.
Yeah, but she also tried to be a WWE diva, and she said the ring.
I see that.
The ring prepared her for Vicky.
Okay. And listen, it's like, it's a tall order to be a new housewife on season 20 of OC, like going back to basics and like bringing all these former vet housewives in, like that's a tall task. And so for her to net out into a place where most of the cast is congratulating her basically on a solid season. That says a lot.
Shannon, who said, I also don't like the new girls. I love Carmela.
Okay. There we go. That's great. And I think that it circles back to the beginning of our conversation where it's like, we expected maybe this episode to have a little bit more of like a celebration of the 20 years and be a little bit more like reflective. And it really wasn't that past the first 2 minutes. It has obviously like a foot in the past because we have to celebrate that, but it really is facing forward and it's still moving forward. And that is like, so that's such an important message to send on such a monumental occasion for the franchise.
Yes. And it's also, to me, nice not to have a fourth returnee in a row who doesn't work out after Taylor to Alexis to Gretchen Pipeline. Like, it actually feels like a true celebration to introduce us to someone new who fits the mold. Versus going back into the past and seeing, does this puzzle piece still fit?
Yeah. I think that like there's a conversation to be had another time about just sort of like, you know, who works in certain groups and like whether to push that or not. And like, I think that that's like an interesting layered conversation, but I'm glad to hear that Carmelo works. And last question for you, you know, I think you have a lot of hints and an idea of what sort of where this season is going. You said we're going to see a lot of former Housewives of OC pop up on this season. Do you get the impression that any of them will be more than just popping up on an episode? Like, do any of them sort of become more of like a friend of type role or no?
I don't think anybody kind of becomes part of the drama. I think they are all, you know, cameos. As cameos, little parties, little conversations, that sort of thing. I think the person who would want that to happen is probably Joe. She was the only alum who showed up for the premiere party. There were supposed to be others that all kind of scheduling and timing didn't work out. And she still seems to have like a lot of reverence for the show. I think she also feels like, oh God, I missed out on like the real experience because my two seasons were not what this show is now. And she is the one person who speaks in the trailer too. I think she and like Peggy Tanouse speak in the trailer from Past Housewives. But yeah, I don't think any of them get involved in the drama, at least as far as I know.
Yeah, she was up there posing with the rest of the cast.
Yes. To be fair, they told her to do that. She didn't like jump into the group.
I believe it. I believe it. But
you got to sit on the panel too.
And I'm sure if Gina Keogh had been there, I'm sure if any of the other women had been there, they would have been up in that group picture. It just so happens she was the only former housewife.
Yeah, it was funny. But it was Gina and Lori were supposed to be there.
Got it. Well, I feel like it was a solid premiere. It sets us up for a season that just feels like it's gonna hit home. It's gonna feel good, and they have all the ingredients. And as you said, like the cast is really solid. It feels like it vibes, and it's gonna be funny and entertaining. And there's gonna be some drama. Like I'm excited for this season. It also feels good for the summer. You know,
yes, it feels exactly what we need in this moment in time.
And like post Summer House Scandal, I'm like, girl, I want something like this.
Yeah, I don't want to be so deep in the muck of it. I just want to turn my brain off, turn my TV on, and have fun.
That is the motto. Turn our brain off and turn our TV on. Bryce, you said that you had interviewed all the women at the premiere party, and you're always interviewing people. Where can people go to find those interviews now and throughout the season?
Yeah, so everything will be on Entertainment Tonight's YouTube page, and I link everything on my Instagram at Bryce Sanders, so you can find it easily. But yeah, all the OC interviews should be out by the time this is out.
Okay, amazing. Yeah, I mean, I also, Bryce, I love when like one of your interviews pops up on YouTube, and it's like, it's giving like 20 plus minutes, and I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm sad.
I'm always like, do people want to watch something this long?
Oh, we do. And you asked the right question, so everyone go subscribe to the Entertainment Tonight YouTube channel. Bryce, always a pleasure, thank you so much, and then we'll do this again soon. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.